performances. There's so many of them this time of year as seasons start to wrap up, and that includes the Gonzaga Symphony in its final concert of the year. And a real treat about the Gonzaga Symphony is the array of extraordinary guest artists that this orchestra tends to bring into town. And this is fun because we get a return appearance from Alon Goldstein, who came here to play with the symphony a couple of years ago and is back with us. So good morning, Alon.
Good morning. Great to be here.
And glad to have you back. And remind me, what did you play with the Spokane Symphony? Or is that too long ago to remember?
Mozart D minor concerto.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So you and Mozart. Let's start there, and then we'll talk in a little bit about the Mendelssohn that you're going to do with the Gonzaga Symphony. We just came off that recording that you did a couple years ago of those two concertos in the chamber music version, string quartet plus string bass. Talk about Lochner, who created that arrangement.
Well, a 19th century composer, conductor, musician, first and foremost. And sadly, many other musicians not necessarily remembered, but I found these interesting arrangements, and they were done at a time where rearranging music was very common, and getting to know music was something very common.
Because you couldn't go to YouTube.
Exactly. not everyone had the internet just yet. And you wanted to get to know a certain piece more intimately, so you arrange it for a combination that you can work with. And he probably had a few friends, quartet. He told them, come Friday night after dinner, before dinner, let's just read this music. He did not arrange it for particular concerts lined up, but it was just for the possibility of, I think, getting to know the music more intimately and just playing the music together. And again, concerts with orchestras was not as abundant as we have right now. Not to mention, of course, the access to, to a recording. So he just arranged it and for domestic use, salon use, and played this concerto by Mozart, which is really quite unique.
When you found it, has it kind of languished in obscurity, or has it been played off and on over the centuries?
What, the arrangement?
The arrangement, yeah.
I found that it went straight into obscurity.
Okay.
And also, we are living now, in the last 50 years almost, at an age where, if you buy an edition of a Mozart concerto, I mean, you want to have it as clean as possible, straight going down the line to what the composer drank the morning he wrote it. and 100 years ago, or 19th century and beginning of the 20th century, you will have the Busoni edition and the Czerny edition, all these really admirable musicians having their own edition because you wanted to know what the great musicians thought about this music. Now get all of this out. I want to have it as pure and clean as possible. And the same with arrangement. Oh, no, we don't arrange anything. It's blasphemy. It's like it has to be as pure as when the composer just wrote it. And there is pros for that, but also cons, because it's very interesting.
Talk about the cons. Yeah.
Well, when you rearrange this music and the Mozart concerti, they don't need to be rearranged, and they are so beautiful as they are. I think in these particular arrangements and in Mozart concerti, since they are kind of miniature operas, and when I played with an orchestra, then the woodwinds get a lot of the operatic characters, whether it's Susanna or Figaro or Cherubino, and I'm making this dialogue with people who are about 12 feet away from me, looking at the conductor, hopefully.
Listening to a pianist, hopefully.
Exactly. And when you do it with a quartet, then the conversation is much more intimate because they're very close by and it's more intense in some ways. So there is a certain cons for that. There's definitely certain positive elements in terms of doing that, but the downside of doing this arrangement is you lose certain of the colors of an orchestra. We're having all of the colors of an orchestra, and of course the size and the drama that you get from having a big orchestra. But you know, I'm very interested in always in finding the positive in every aspect. If I play the arrangement, then I will see all the positive side of doing it and try to bring it through the music. I think also hearing an arrangement of a music, then you have a chance maybe to hear certain things in different light. I think, you know, when people ask me to compare the arrangement with the original and what is better, I'll say, of course, the original is better. Mm-hmm. But I'm giving you another opportunity mm-hmm. to hearing it slightly different. Maybe you'll get some new answers to old questions.
Alon Goldstein, who's playing Mendelssohn in town, but we're talking about Mozart. You know what we're going to do, Alon. Let's play just the first few bars of the famous Elvira Madigan theme that, you know, that I played on the radio 20 minutes ago, and listen to that for a few moments, and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Okay.
So here that goes. So I'm interviewing the pianist, and we play nothing but the instrumental part. But that was that famous Elvira Madigan theme. We have to use that just for relational thing. Played by the string quartet plus the double bass, and I found it just beautiful to hear. What did you think when you first heard it?
You know, we're talking about an operatic character, mm-hmm. and usually it's being played by a section. Well, here it's played by one singer mm. rather than a full section of singers. And again, I think you have a certain intimacy to it. You have a certain pure connection one-on-one, which I think is very special, slightly different, very special. Another thought which I thought when I played these arrangements was that there are certain composers that yield themselves, allow their music to be rearranged more easily than others. For example, I heard music of Bach being rearranged and sounding very convincing. Mm. I never heard Chopin's music being rearranged and sounding convincing. So where is Mozart? And I think since his music is basically vocal oriented, then it's somewhere in the middle. It's not, I mean, I think it can be rearranged, and sometimes it's more successful and sometimes it's a little less successful, but it's definitely worth trying, and it's definitely worth, you know, seeing how you connect to it and what you react to it. And I found that this was extremely successful. And, you know, we're doing another recording in 3 weeks with the Concerti 23 and 24, and I cannot wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these late Mozart concertos that you're going to do again with exactly the same group, the Fine Arts Quartet, or is it with a different quartet?
With the Fine Arts.
Okay, and then their bass player that comes along. And that alone changes everything, doesn't it, to have the string bass in there?
Well, the string bass is the frame of the picture. Mm-hmm. It liberates the cello. So you have to have it to a large extent, not in this particular movement that we just played, but in many of the other movements, the double bass basically doubles the cello. In this particular movement, it's independent of the cello, and the cello is independent of the bass. Mm. It's the one that provides the pizzes, the pizzicatos. But you have to have it. When we rehearsed once or twice without the bass player, you just feel like you have no ground. Mm. So when we perform, it's always been with a bass player, even if it's just doubling the cello, but it suddenly gives the frame, the ground, the gravitas in a way.
Mm. Alon Goldstein, who is, we've been talking about Mozart, doing Mendelssohn, the Mendelssohn First Piano Concerto with the Gonzaga Symphony tonight in that performance at the Martin Wolfson Theater at the Fox. And so far you've nicely illuminated obvious and less obvious differences between an orchestra versus a chamber music ensemble. Do the same thing for Mendelssohn and Mozart, their commonalities and their differences.
Well, in terms of similarities between Mendelssohn and Mozart, I think there is a certain clarity, a certain precision, a certain transparency of the music that benefits both very, very much. Both of them thrives on having their music to be really very, like, you can look through it. It's a music sends a cholesterol. It's very pure. So I think that's very important. I mentioned earlier when we met about rehearsal we had yesterday, and you know, the notation, the markings by a composer are to a large extent the same. You know, a composer will write here to play loud and here to play soft, and the, you know, marking for loud is F for forte, and the marking for soft is P for piano. But if Mozart writes the piano and Mendelssohn writes the piano and Brahms writes the piano, is it the same? They all write the same markings, but there is a certain element of the music, you know, the texture of Brahms would be a much thicker, heavier texture. And in that respect, Mendelssohn and Mozart are similar. The texture is lighter. You know, both have a lot of drama, but it's in a different, it's a drama with less weight. As I like to say, less weight, more wheat.
There you go. And now differences, Mozart and Mendelssohn.
Differences. Help me out.
It's 60 years later, for whatever that matters or doesn't.
Yeah, I don't find Mendelssohn's music to be operatic. I think it's more instrumental. Mm-hmm. I think structural-wise, the Mozart concerto is, you know, I guess classical. There's a word, periodicity, where there are. The music has a period, has a comma, has a question mark, has a quotation mark. I mean, it's very sentences oriented, and there's a first movement, there's a first theme, there's sections, and with the Mendelssohn in that respect also is more romantic, that it's more through composed. It's like a tone poem, you know, one sentence goes into the other almost seamlessly, less commas. And so the whole, I think, dramatic unfolding of the piece is different than a Mozart. With Mozart, you have a certain section that is drama, and then it's going to be answered by another section. And here, it's like also, you know, Mozart concerto starts with a certain introduction that introduces the characters that we're going to play with and discuss with. Mozart just throws you straight into the drama. There's no introduction of anything. You just figure it out as you go along. You're starting with the argument there.
Well, let's get a little bit of example and hear your performance of the opening of the Mendelssohn Piano Concerto No. 1. Thank you. And then much more will be coming along, and that's the opening of the Mendelssohn Concerto.
As we heard that, so I was one of the things I was thinking is also subject matters of what Mozart was preoccupied with versus Mendelssohn. And you think of operas of Mozart, and there was something about the, you know, daily life, you know, the marriage of Figaro, the whole idea of the common people versus the aristocracy, something that was very important at that time. The playwright who wrote the play of the marriage of Figaro, Beaumarchais, you know, he was put in jail for even questioning the aristocracy versus the common people. So this is something that Mozart was very important for him to deal with, and as opposed to Mendelssohn, who's you know writing about mythology, about forest creatures, the Shakespeare's Midsummer Night Dream, you know, and a lot of these characters come to life in his music, those elves and trolls and but again, it's a very different mythology than a Wagner mythology, which needs, you know, heavy big swords and dragons. I mean, it's, I don't need the, necessarily Mendelssohn needs the dragons. I think he needs more the fairy tales, yeah, and the fantasy.
Well, Mendelssohn's life didn't include dragons.
Yes, you're right. But it did include Goethe, and it did include some very, very prominent characters, very profound characters.
Sure, of that emerging German Romanticism.
Enlightenment, yes.
Yeah, that was happening at that time. So the first movement of the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto, also that seemed pretty fast. Was that faster than some people take it? Because it had all that amazing energy within it.
Yeah. If it's faster than others, honestly, I don't know.
Yeah. You haven't sat around having a world land speed record race.
You know, there's something. That particular one was a live recording, mm-hmm, which adds a certain adrenaline, which probably is one notch faster than a metronome.
Sure.
But I wouldn't necessarily compare it to other people in terms of, I don't know, I try to serve what the music asks.
Sure. Well, and it certainly felt, you know, that there was a cohesion to that tempo. It was really, really thrilling. Let's kind of work our way through the Mendelssohn Piano Concerto. What do you want to say about the second movement that we're going to do a little bit of the opening?
I think there is something that I always like to talk about, which is the choice of key. A key for a composer is like a color for the painter. When Beethoven decides to write his Fifth Symphony in C minor, it's a very conscious decision. It cannot be in D minor or F minor. Wouldn't work. I mean, C minor has a certain dark color to it. And if Mendelssohn wrote the piece in G minor, I think one way to understand keys and colors is to compare with other pieces in the same key. Mm. And we talked about the similarity with Mozart. Mendelssohn's G minor concerto, this is in G minor. You know, we should go and listen to Mozart's 40th symphony and Mozart's 25th symphony, both G minor pieces, and have a certain similar drama type, I think. Very different than a D minor drama type. Mm-hmm. With D minor drama type is the Requiem by mm-hmm. Mozart, which is a tragic drama. Mm-hmm. This is not a tragic drama. But both minor, yeah. But you see, D minor is a tragic drama, and G minor is a different, is exciting drama. It's a different type, and I think it's always important to try to find more words to describe. The second movement is in E major, so when you learn theory, that's not supposed to be the key.
That's a long ways away.
Yes, it's you suddenly land on a different planet. I mean, why? And again, that's not a coincidence. That's not, he just landed it there. You know, it should have been D major, you know, the dominant, or it should be B flat, the relative major, as we say. But again, so the big answer will always be to go and listen to other pieces in this key of E major, the color of E major, which is the second movement. And you couldn't find many pieces in that key. So that means, he's really trying to step in territories that are not, you know, walked upon. So commonly or regularly. And, you know, for example, you do find E major as the last song of the Schöne Müllerin, by Schubert, which is this huge song cycle about, you know, the unrequited, the unfulfilled love of the, you know, poor lad who works in the mill and is falling in love with a girl and she never returns the love. And finally, he commits suicide in the penultimate song. And the last song is in E major, and this is where he sings from heaven. So maybe E major. And incidentally, the penultimate song is in G minor, the one that he actually throws himself into the river. To tell you that Mendelssohn didn't know that, I think Mendelssohn definitely knew that. So penultimate song of the Schönemüller is in G minor, and the last song where he's in heaven is in E major. Mendelssohn is writing a piano concerto. I never thought of that. But Mendelssohn is writing his first concerto with the first movement in G minor and then finishing in, I mean, second movement in E major, probably when our hero is in heaven.
Well, since you just discovered that right in front of us, and that's pretty fun, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play just the first few notes of the first movement so we get the G minor in our ears, and then we'll go and we'll hear the beginning of the second movement. So we will hear that difference of those two keys. So a little bit of that key sense of relationship and alone. You were saying that it's a long, long tune that kept going even after the place I faded out.
Yeah, we came in maybe to halfway through.
Yeah. So that alone that's like telling a whole story rather than singing a song or something, whatever metaphor we want to make on what he's doing on that second movement.
Well, he wrote many, many songs without words. But it's definitely a very long tune, you know, in a most remote, heavenly beauty key.
The Mendelssohn First Piano Concerto, which my guest Alon Goldstein is doing tonight with the Gonzaga Symphony at the Fox at 7:30. That also includes Tchaikovsky. So then Mendelssohn, with that lovely first name of Felix, lucky, happy, however we want to translate his first name, he gets out of that for his last movement, right? Yeah, talk about the last movement a little bit.
Well, first, I think it's one of the first concerti that is actually kind of almost like a one movement piece. It has its first movement, second and third, but they're all connected. There's no really a break where you sit down and you know and readjust your chair. So it goes on, and Mendelssohn always found some kind of a common note that will connect between the movements. So that E major and ending in E major, that E, and it begins also that third movement, which is just incredibly fast, full of vitality and vibrancy and incredible wit and sense of humor. So it's a really fun movement to play that is always kind of bringing the house down in terms of how clever it is, and it's wonderful. It's just great music, and the orchestras and everyone is smiling.
Well, in our ongoing teases of beginnings, the endings I'll have to wait for tonight. Let's hear just a touch of the opening of the third movement. And it goes on, so you'll have to hear that tonight in the concert at the Fox. Alon Goldstein, we only have about another minute to talk, but you are doing things just all over the world. You recorded this with the Israel Chamber Orchestra, and you said you just came in from Hungary just in the last day or two, right?
Yes, 28-hour travel.
Yeah, it's amazing. And where do you go from here? And what are a couple?
I'll come home for a night, and then I go.
And where's home? New York?
DC.
Oh, DC. Okay.
And then I go to Montreal to play at the Montreal Chamber Music Festival this coming weekend after tonight. It will be an all Beethoven program with violin sonata, with Andrew Wan, and the cello sonata with Dennis Brott, and then a trio with both of them.
Great. Well, you have, and you simply love to play music. I've seen that in you. You just have a great time doing this, don't you?
I always say this is the best job in the world, but I wouldn't recommend it. It's a life of privilege, but you obviously have to learn to reconcile and to embrace. Mm-hmm. Traveling 28 hours and rehearsing the next day and not seeing your family and being nervous. But it's a life of privilege. I'm very grateful.
Well, we'll enjoy the results of that tonight at the Fox at 7:30. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Great. Thank you.